This is Due By Friday, a weekly challenge podcast with Merlin Mann, Alex Cox, and Max Temkin. This week's challenge, read Max's U.S. political Twitter list.
Live challenge. It's live. We're live.
It's our first live episode. Happy Black Friday. Happy Friday.
Wow, that went so much better than I anticipated.
It's kind of weird.
God damn it, Alex. I thought you were going to fuck it up. That
I know.
Funny.
I really did, too.
Even though I
pitched my wife on this. I was like, it's going to be so great because Alex is going to come in and she's going to screw it up and get mad. It's going to be so good.
Alex, even though we record a podcast for multiple hours a week together and I work with you every day, it's still very weird to hear you do the intro. I've actually never heard you do the intro.
Very upsetting. Oh, I always I've do heard it before it you guys come in.
I've heard it like 100 times. I know. It's weird. Very weird.
Ugh. Tell people what's going on, you guys. What's happening?
I don't know. Merlin, you're a little quiet in my headphones. Can we turn the headphones
Sorry.
Up? That's okay.
Sorry, Max. Tell everybody what's going on.
Yeah.
Hey, that's good. Thank you.
Our engineer Chris engineer is in Chris. The studio. Can you,
Hello.
As this is a live show, thanks to all of our live listeners, can you pull up our jazz bumpers as well a bit, please?
What do you guys know? What's the Thanksgiving plan? What's the playbook here?
Oh,
you mean yesterday?
TBD.
Well, TBD. Mm-hmm. It was a great Thanksgiving, and now we're live because it's fucking Friday.
Wait, why can't we say what
Friday.
Our Thanksgiving plans are?
Well, now it's socially acceptable for me to put up all my Christmas decorations, and I'm going to go to the terrible, terrible suburbs, and that's it. How about you?
We're having everyone over to our place.
Hooray!
We have both the families coming over.
Mm.
What are you doing, Merlin?
I'm going to stay in my house with lots of guns, so don't go there. I also got a fucking dog.
We've compromised the OPSEC. Okay, edit this out.
I'll do a video walkthrough. I'll do a video walkthrough, show you all my guns. If you Antifa want to come to my house, it'll be fine with me. Fucking Thanksgiving, here's your present. Open it early. It's gun.
Have either of you done the whole like Thanksgiving Jenga situation or any holiday Jenga really where you have to go to multiple places on
the
same day?
Oh, I thought you meant play Jenga on Thanksgiving.
No, that's much more fun.
Okay.
That's much, much more fun.
I was pouring coffee, but I have definitely done that. I've been in today's fraught environment. Well, you know, as a kid coming up, I grew up in that age where I believe it first became conventional wisdom that about half of marriages ended in divorce. And so you have this kind of like Mandelbrot fractal holiday where you're like, oh, we'll figure out all of these impossible combinations of everybody in their new family. And then the new family has to do things with the new family. And it's like scheduling a goddamn podcast in August. It's impossible.
Yeah.
And so you have to make all these accommodations where you're like, we'll have leftovers with them, but we'll be with them for this. And like, and then you have to get into this arc. And really, this will be fun for you to look forward to, Alex, is you start having to figure out how to accommodate and make up for this in the next holiday. We're like, okay, we're coming for all of Easter. And it's going to be great. It'll be like super Christmas. It can be so stressful.
Now, what do you guys tell me about the Thanksgiving meal here?
Well, as you know, Max, I come from the meat
packing
family.
Well, Alex, you're a bit of a foodie.
Yes.
You know, you're kind of known on this podcast.
So my family is actually a bunch of foodies if you count, like, you know, pork as a foodie situation. So most people would consider my Thanksgiving dinner like top of the notch amazing. People, non-family members come to it. But I have a separate meal in which I have homemade chicken fingers, raw asparagus, and some butter corn.
Do you get a toy?
I do. And then they give me a little sucker.
You the McDonald's Coke?
You can have a water or
You're
a
joking,
milk.
But that happens.
Dad break. Oh God, we should do this every week.
I spit on the table because Max made it funny.
Oh dear.
Do you see? Okay. I have a lot. This brings up a lot of questions. I have a lot of meat-related questions.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, I've upgraded my home smoker situation. I now have. I got a 500-pound commercial smoker lifted onto my balcony with a 500 crane.
500 pounds of what?
What?
Well, I'm sorry. This is going to be one of those scale situations. Does the smoker weigh 500
yes.
pounds, or does it contain 500
God.
Pounds of meat?
No. The smoker itself. It's like a huge commercial smoker.
Oh shit, dog.
Mm.
I had to make a relationship with like a restaurant supply company, and I got this like huge commercial smoker. So it's like the smoker that wins like championship barbecue things. Although I'm honestly not that good at it. I'm still learning. But I'm upgrading from I had like a little electric smoker that's a lot easier to use but not as good, and I'm going all in. So did your family have like the pork hookup for me?
You know what? I mean, yeah. Ask any time. We do not have a Vienna beef hookup anymore. But you've got that.
But yeah,
I know you want the fancy pig meats. We should have one of my very confused family members and have like a pork challenge in which I don't participate.
Oh my god! Can they mail pork?
Oh yeah, no. All the time they're offering to send
challenge
meat.
Idea. Here we go. You and I both make pork. You're not going to eat it.
And we mail
one to Merlin. Now, Merlin loves his delivery meats. Merlin, are you currently subscribed to any delivery meat services?
No, I don't have any current blood bags, but I certainly have enjoyed having meat delivered to my house. Any pork you want to send me would be happily received. I think that's totally legal.
Have either of you been in, not a butcher shop, but a packing house?
Oh, hell yeah.
No, thank you.
Oh, yeah. Not scarring at all.
Now, not a slaughterhouse, a packing house.
Just a packing house. Like, a slaughterhouse is almost like, I've also been in one of those, but it was one of, like, the humane ones in, like, Portland, and it was like, okay, this is very upsetting, but I understand.
What makes it humane, exactly?
I don't know. They told me that, and I believed.
They play a little jazz for the animals before they...
Let it take some AP classes.
Yeah, it was fine.
They give them old Xanax before they slaughter them.
Yeah, there's.
Now I've watched videos of pigs being slaughtered. They do not make a good noise. The noise they make I would describe it as haunting.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the noises they. I think it's one of the noises they used as a audio effect in The Exorcist.
Mm.
It's apparently a very upsetting noise.
The Wilhelm pork.
They're so smart, you guys. You can teach them to sit. They're easier than cats. They're so smart. We're just eating dolphins.
Okay.
I know. I'm sorry.
Oh no.
So I have two turkeys. I'm smoking. I spatchcocked one turkey. I'm doing a dry brine.
I just learned that word. I learned that word on
Bob's Burgers
this week.
Well, I'm very on trend because that Bob's Burgers episode was making fun of me. Very much so. So
you're not doing a 3-day brine?
No, I've already been stressing out about the dry brine time, as my family can attest.
In this economy?
But I spatchcocked, and then I'm going to smoke it, and then the other turkey, we're doing like a more traditional oven-roasted turkey, because I know that some of my guests will not, the smoked turkey is not quite traditional enough. It has too much flavor and juiciness for them.
Mm-hmm. I'm a weirdo about these things. When I get a new device, I feel like I like to try a couple things as test projects in it before I go all in on event dining.
Yes.
Have you done any test 500-pound cooks?
I have not smoked this. So I smoked a turkey on the other smoker last year. This is my first turkey on this smoker, which is also why it's good that we have a backup turkey. But I've done some short rib and smoked some tofu and...
Smoked tofu. That could be really good.
Do you use firm?
It's very good. Extra firm.
Extra firm?
Mm-hmm. 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 Merlin, on your other show, on your other program with John Roderick, do you know the one I'm talking about?
I think I know what this is about.
What do you know? Well, wait, what do you think it's about?
Oh, I was going to guess that it's about John going in on a steer, getting a ton of very costly meat and then just dropping it into a pan with oil.
it wasn't about that, but now it is.
No.
Go ahead. What's the other one?
Okay, you talked about.
Sorry, edit that out, Alex.
I listened to this podcast on like a 6-month delay, and you were talking a while back about adopting a homeless guy in San Francisco.
Yes, Larry.
and your homeless guy is kind of having some tough times, and you saw him on the train. Was the story that you told?
Yes. Yeah, now, I saw him 2 days ago sleeping on the street in West Portal.
How do you adopt a homeless guy? You sort of glossed over this, and I was like, how do you initiate first contact?
I never really thought about it very much. The basic notion is that, and this is just my own thing. This is not advice. Please don't send me things about how I shouldn't give money to homeless people. Shut up. It's the holidays. So you will, in walking around in any, really almost any city at this point, but especially in a city like San Francisco, where there's a really serious homeless problem. Homeless problem in the sense that a lot of people don't have homes. And, well, no, as opposed to you're messing up the mall, stinky
right.
guy.
Yeah.
You will have a sad realization, even in my suburban neighborhood, that there are at least a handful of people that you see a lot and often. And over time, you may develop like sort of like a nodding relationship. You know, you might get a, hey, how's it going kind of thing going on. Or for whatever personal reason, you adopt sounds condescending. But what I mean is I have a practice of I don't give money to every person who asks for it or seems to need it. I kind of choose one person that for just mostly for me, every time I see him, I give him this amount of money. And my guy is Larry.
That's
and
so, so nice.
And so, well, no, it's not really that
does
nice.
Does he know
I mean,
who you
God,
are?
It would be nice if I could wave a wand and make everything go away. But, like, anybody who's actually given 2 seconds of thought to this problem and researched it knows that this is so much more ridiculously complicated and multivariate than simply saying, here's this easy way to fix this problem. This city has tried somewhat. But what it comes down to is there are so many vectors into what leads somebody to being in what to a person with a home looks like a very simple situation. Well, why don't we get them
when
home?
Did you learn the guy's name? I want to know the mechanics of how this works. So you go up to him and you give him money over and over.
Well, no, it started out as like,
is it like I a slot machine? Like you feed quarters into him and eventually he
yes.
tells you his name?
No, he's not a road. Oh boy.
No, but eventually, you know, you feel like it gets hot and it's your time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be a payout, is I think the way it works. Mm-hmm. And then I get, you know, and also, you know, it's a little bit rigged because they know when I'm close to spending more because I feel like I'm due. No, it started out as like he was a local guy in the neighborhood who's very recognizable. And I suspect, I have not treated him personally, but I suspect that he has pretty severe schizophrenia. And
are you allowed to diagnose that as long as I say
I haven't treated him personally.
I see.
That's the ethics of this, according to my group. Podcasters. and he was mostly kind of this like rah, bleh. That was mainly his thing was bleh. He was that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And like he's obviously not in a good way. He frequently had wounds all over him. Like he clearly got like into altercations a lot and just kind of like slept in something with his shoes next to him all the time. And at a certain point, things escalated and he became much more aggressive and loud and violent. And basically anytime my infant daughter and I were walking down the street, I would be very scared. We had lots of confrontations. And it was kind of, you know, it sucked. It sucked for everybody. Fast forward. At some point, I think he got swept up and maybe medicated. Something happened. And it became sweetly heartbreaking to talk to him because he was super copious and very smart and could have probably been like an associate professor somewhere, and he seemed really fine and nice and smart, and you could have a conversation with him. And that's when we introduced ourselves to each other during this period of lucidity that lasted for some period of weeks, and I got to know him, and then I would occasionally, you know, give him a few bucks, and then when I'd see him, I'd give him a few bucks. And even
well,
though
who talked to who first?
Well, at a certain point, it became clear that he was less out of control, for lack of a better word,
mm-hmm.
and I said, you know, there's no reason for me to be such a dick. Like I've known for 20 years that when you talk to somebody who's having a problem like that, it's not that they're a bad person. That's a mental thing. And I thought, you know, quit being such a dick and model well for your kid. Like be decent to people, like, even if you don't have to be. And because I'm a hero.
So you went up to him and you said, hi, my name is Merlin.
Hello. You probably are familiar with my program. Yes. You probably know me from MacBreak Weekly or Inbox Zero.
I did a talk in New Zealand once.
I mean, seriously, what's your line? I mean, how
do you cranking?
Cranking
is a very
popular
homeless person, Max. What is this?
I wrote it down in my little notes because Merlin casually mentioned that he adopted a homeless guy in San Francisco, and I was like, how do you start talking to a homeless guy?
You go.
Well, then you're not letting me
talk.
Get to the heartbreaking part, which is like then it went back to the way it was, and that's kind of where it is now. Mm-hmm. But he's still like nice to me mostly, unless he's in like mid freak out, like freak out as in getting thrown off the train. Cause yeah, you see the same people on the train, you see him on the street. Anyway, and so the idea is when I see him, I always say, hey, Larry. And I hand him a bill and we keep walking. And he says, thanks. And mostly. And that's just a thing we do.
Mm.
Are you asking how to decide who to pick? How do you?
Well, that's an interesting question of how do you pick
everybody
a good
likes
one.
The little ones. But the ones in their 60s with the big
bushy like the homeless
beard.
Guys. So we have like our our local homeless guys are the guys under the North Avenue Bridge and the like Cortland Bridge and the Armitage Bridge, and I pass them all the time, and we always bring them like extra food if we have events or any sort of stuff at the office. Like those are our guys we bring food to. Like I've given them a few bucks. Like I walk by them like almost every day. But what I'm trying to figure out is like when's the I've never had a conversation. I've never stopped and had a conversation. What's the icebreaker there? Like do you go up to them and like do you have I'm like fascinated by. Well, how do you start this conversation? I mean, literally, do you go up and be like, "Hi, my name is Max. What's your deal? Do you have a moving backstory?"
No, I think you need a simple gesture in three words. Here you go, and you keep walking.
But yet, you befriended this guy.
He doesn't need to thank me. He doesn't need to know who I am. Maybe his life will suck less for 20 minutes.
No, that's not what I'm asking. But you did have a conversation with this guy.
Oh,
you
I've had lots of conversations. Yeah.
But what I'm asking is how do you transition from giving him a couple of dollars and walking by. Somehow someone must have said something.
That's okay. I think I see your point. I take your point. And I don't think this is purely a San Francisco thing, is like if you walk the same corridor, let's say it's on a commute or something, especially like you come out of the BART station, there will be certain folks who tend to be in certain areas and you will see them over and over in a kind of Groundhog Day type situation where eventually like you feel like you kind of get to know, maybe it's that person's moods, maybe it's knowing when to avoid them because they're being a little bit erratic, but like you get to know those people whether you want to or not, the same way you would get to know a barista that kind of thing.
Yep.
So that it's that proximity and frequency where eventually it seems kind of silly not to at least say hello. They're just another person that lives in your neighborhood. They just happen to be living in front of the ATM.
So one day you were just like the stars are aligned, like everyone's in a good mood here.
I hadn't
here.
Thought it through. I mean, it wasn't something I didn't have a plan for. And I don't mean, again, I'm not trying to make this out to be like a big thing. And a lot of people are going to criticize this. A lot of people are going to say the worst thing that you
can
do for
somebody. Wait a minute. What are you talking about?
There's
a
culture of
huge
folks.
Movement. Huge movement for this.
Yeah.
Of saying don't talk to homeless people?
Yeah,
well, definitely don't give them
money. Don't give them. Oh,
go fuck yourselves.
Yeah, I agree.
Who cares?
So many.
Yeah, like if you go work on fixing the big problem, and meanwhile, like maybe this person like gets a quart of liquor and they feel better.
Oh
for
my god, that's so. I guess I have heard this because I sometimes like a cab driver. We have guys. Do you guys have guys that go on the highway exits and sort of walk up and down
So like have a sign or something.
Yeah. So we get tons of those guys, and a lot of times if I'm taking like a Lyft home or whatever, the driver will. Like turn to me and say, those guys make 60 grand a year.
Yeah,
or, they always have some sort of.
Those panhandlers, they don't actually, they're just grifters.
Oh, or another one will say, that guy's not really homeless because his like clothes are too clean or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's like, who gives a shit? Like whose hobby is that? Like standing on the side of the highway and like asking for dollars. Like just give him a buck. Like something you must need it if you're standing there and asking people for it.
In Chicago, the biggest homeless population is actually in Lakeview, and it is a case where you would not notice that
because of the brunch options.
Dude, it's so true. Like, I do have everyone pat me on the back. I have a lot of homeless friends who just happen to be, like, they are queer, they have a mental illness, and hey, we have that in common.
Like, you're friends with them, like on Twitter?
Well, we would meet outside of concerts, and they would be like, they would stay afterwards, and you can hear the band from outside, and eventually it just comes up in conversation. I don't know. I did not adopt them. And then we talk about how shitty Twitter has become, or like, they're like, Grindr really sucks these days. And it's, I don't know.
Yeah, just warm up a can of beans over a trash can fire and talk about sexual harassment allegations.
Oh, boy. Cut that out, Alex.
Oh, God.
I can't be edited.
Jazz break.
This is the greatest thing we've ever done. Follow-up. The Washington Post. Seeking to prove that a conspiracy of astronauts fabricated the shape of the Earth, a California man intends to launch himself 1,800 feet high on Saturday in a rocket that he built from scrap metal. Assuming the 500-mile-per-hour, mile-long flight through the Mojave Desert does not kill him, Mike Hughes told the Associated Press his journey into the Atmos flat will mark...
No, come on now.
I'm actually reading this article for the first time, and I cannot believe he calls it the Atmos flat. Oh, my God. Assuming that his 500-mile-per-hour journey does not kill him, Mike Hughes told the Associated Press his journey into the Atmos flat will mark the first phase of his ambitious flat Earth space program. Hughes' ultimate goal is a subsequent launch that puts him miles above the Earth, where the 61-year-old limousine driver hopes to photograph proof of the disc we all live on. Quote, it'll shut the door on this ball Earth, Hughes said of a in a fundraising interview with a flat Earth group for Saturday's flight. Theories discussed during the interview include NASA being controlled by round Earth Freemasons and Elon Musk making fake rockets and blimps.
I was just going to say, if the Earth was flat, Elon's job would be a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. Hughes promised the flat Earth community that he would expose the conspiracy with his steam-powered rocket, which will launch from a heavily modified mobile home. This can't be real.
This is like the Colonel Sanders tent. This doesn't seem real.
Quick question for all of our live listeners now. Where can they find this article? Not that you
Washington
know.
Post. Okay. Washington Post.
Washington.
homemade rocket.
He acknowledged he still has much to learn about rocket science. Quote, this whole tech thing, he said in a June interview, I'm really behind the eight ball.
This is the thing. You've heard that term cafeteria Catholic, which is somebody that chooses in a given religious tradition, they'll decide to honor certain traditions and not others. I think he's a cafeteria scientist, and I say good on him. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't want all the science. He doesn't want the stuff about the shape of the Earth, but he will take just enough to get a 500-mile-per-hour scrap metal rocket strapped onto a mobile home. Hakuna Matata.
That said, Hughes isn't totally an unproven engineer. He set a Guinness World Record in 2002 for a limousine jump, according to Ars Technica, and has been building rockets for years, albeit with mixed results. Quote, okay, Waldo, 3, 2, 1, someone yells in a test fire video from 2012. There's a brief hiss of boiling water, and then nothing. So Hughes walks up to the engine and pokes it with a stick, at which point a thick cloud of steam belches out towards the camera. He built his first manned rocket in 2014, the Associated Press reported, and managed to fly a quarter mile over Winkelmann, Arizona. As seen in a YouTube video, the flight ended with Hughes being dragged, moaning from the remains of the rocket. The injuries he suffered put him in a walker for 2 weeks, he said.
You're going to feel so bad when this guy's a fucking folk hero. Like, even if he ends up getting a shot of the round Earth, what a fucking folk hero this fool
Oh, I can already imagine the Milos Forman film about his life.
Oh, God.
For our live audience, you really need to see the picture of this rocket. Like, it looks like an illegal firework. It's really great.
Well, it looks like a child's drawing of a rocket.
Oh, yeah, man.
That's pretty impressive. You got to admit. Oh, it's got a URL on it.
I mean, he's...
I missed that.
Nano Lube Corp. What the hell is that?
He's certainly going to kill himself doing this.
Corp.com. He's gonna take one for
now,
the team.
Now, Merlin, you're making fun of me for not liking the KFC thing. But can you explain what that is to our listeners?
I don't want to get into this. You comedy people are so not funny.
Please explain.
I just sent you
is.
A funny thing because KFC's on a jag nowadays, where they're trying to be funny and hip. They keep changing their kernel. They keep offering products that may or may not exist. And there was a thing going around that is probably almost certainly fake, which is that you can get a Colonel Sanders Faraday cage for $10,000 to sit in where you can't get Wi-Fi. And it looks like the colonel is humping a tent that you're sitting inside of. And I just thought it was silly and fun. And you guys went, wah.
The reason I don't like it, so it is, kudos to them for actually building the thing and selling it. That's a good...
If they are really selling it.
Well, I think they are. I mean, it's for $10,000, so...
If one of us had $10,000... You know, what if, I mean, I'm sure you could return it. Why?
I just think I like the way he looks.
Call their
bluff. You guys don't think it's funny that the colonel is gripping an igloo while he fucks it?
So we come up with like 50 ideas to do every year for Cards Against Humanity, and then we say no to like 48 of them. And this is one of those ideas that would wind up that we would say no to. And let's say we were KFC in this example. Like, what does this have to do with chicken? Like, it just doesn't connect.
That's
like,
why it's funny. That's why
no,
it's stupid.
It doesn't
we're
comment.
We're talking about it.
I know. Well, it is. It did get people's attention, but it's not great comedy. It doesn't.
Okay.
They need to have.
I apologize for trying to entertain you on the private channel.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I'll defer from now on what's funny before I send it.
It just doesn't. What's the angle?
We're done. Oh boy. The problem is I just kind of like that he's humping it, and I feel like that's not the joke.
But look at his terrible long arms and his face. His face, the sigh of resignation that he has
what
to
is
fuck this
what does the Faraday
igloo
cage
again.
Have to do with fried chicken?
Nothing! Jazz break!
Wait, why am I listening to Merlin? Merlin's not in charge. I'm the jazz keeper.
Stop the jazz.
I'm the jazz girl. This is
if they did it as KFC thinks that you should have get around the table with your family and turn your phones off and have chicken dinner together. And
you
so
guys
we
have ruined
and so
the holiday
and so we
again.
Built a Faraday cage.
And Max,
now
the more
I see
talk
an
about
angle.
It, the more I like it. I want you to
but because I'm improving it
call
for them. They didn't say that. I said that.
You need some punch up. The colonel needs some punch up.
They didn't say that. I said that. That's my idea.
You're making it worse.
Max, call them on their bluff. Do it. Do it.
And buy it?
Buy it.
Right, do it right
buy
now.
It's expensive.
Do it right now. Live,
not to
live
the show.
Show. Live show.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. You know, okay, can I complain about something about our audience? So
I
have two.
We can't stop.
I have two. I have two complaints and then I have a nice thing to say. Number one. Nice. Number one. Okay, number one. Last week, I specifically was telling a story about Instagram, and I specifically said, "Don't request to follow me on my private Instagram because I have to go in and clear
what
out.
Could go wrong.
I have to go in and take out all the trash every time I log
What's
in. There's
wrong with these
50
people?
Friend requests from. I assume it's the only place to talk about this, so it's. I assume it's from Dubai Friday, and there's people who request to follow me. Stop doing that. Don't request to follow me. I'm not. You're not gonna. You're not getting in. I can see who requests to follow me. If I don't know you in real life, you're not getting in. That's number
one.
I'm
not Barbra Streisand. I'm not Barbra Streisand.
Stop. What's the frequency, Kenneth? So, number two about our audience. What were we just talking about?
Don't worry. This
you're
the
talking
end
about
end
how right. you can't listen to the show anymore because we're so mean?
So I made a joke. I did a bit several episodes ago where I talked about having a Juicero and then a backup Juicero. And then I was really sad when they went away because I couldn't get my pulp packs anymore. You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
My
yes.
bit?
There
was like a while back on Twitter, someone like Anil Dash or someone was like, can I talk to someone who bought a Juicero for an interview or something? And 500 people started tweeting like, oh, Max has one.
Oh,
so I think people didn't realize that was a bit and they think that I own two Juiceros.
I did not know it was a bit either.
You assumed
also,
I own two Juiceros.
Also, whatever the result, Neil thinks you're being ageist. Just so you know.
You have a home. You need one for the upstairs
I don't,
in the morning.
Of course, I obviously do not own a Juicero. I do own a commercial smoker. I do not, and I do not own a, and I do
balcony.
Not. But I smoke meats. That's a hobby of mine. And I do not own a KFC Faraday cage.
Oh. Really?
Are there any other questions?
Now I
saw them open for Neutral Milk Hotel. You ever seen KFC Faraday Cage? 2, 3, 4.
Now the good thing about our audience, I met a lot of Cox's Cox came up to me and say hi at PAX Unplugged. And everyone was very nice and cool about it. They came up to me and they're like, hey, I like the podcast. And then I said, thank you for listening. And then they left. Then one person I went out and had lunch with, and he was very nice.
But don't expect it.
I feel like a lot of people don't listen to this show because they're like, hey, can we meet up for at PAX? I'm like, I'm not there. Now you're all making – because I was very excited to not go to PAX Unplugged.
Alex, people hear what they want. They think I have two Juiceros. They think I have a Juicero and a backup Juicero.
Can't get your pulp pack.
Well, I can't get them anymore.
I know. They don't make them anymore. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? That's the whole point. You need the pulp pack. Yeah, juicer's useless without a pulp.
The juice pack wouldn't work in the KFC tent. Right? Because you need an internet connection.
Oh, shit, dog. It's got to have a Wi-Fi signal. You'd be juiceless in a tent.
Oh, no.
You'd just be eating chicken like an animal.
My internet lady friend wouldn't work in there. Oh, this is just a disaster.
When I was going to PAX Unplugged, I went through O'Hare. I went through security, and I was wearing my the hoodie that Jen got me, my city, my hood, my block.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy asked me if I was a Latin King, the TSA agent. I got a pat down. I got a pat down, and then the TSA agent asked me, hey, man, you a king? And I was like, what? And he's like, are you a Latin king? And I was like,
No, I support a small journalist outlet.
You know, here's the first, number one, I regard TSA agents as law enforcement officers. I don't actually know where they are.
No,
they're somewhere
not.
On the spectrum of mall cop to actual cop.
No.
I think they can get you. I think they can call the police. Like, I think they can actually get you in trouble.
I think call the
they're
police.
Doing like a citizen's arrest. They might as well be police because they know who to call to get you arrested.
I think they have, right. And plus, I want to make my flight, so I'm not trying to get in trouble. So typically when a TSA agent talks to me, I don't respond, which is the correct thing to do with any law enforcement unless you have a lawyer there. Don't say anything. Just say, you know, you can ask if you're free to go, am I being detained, like those kind of things. But, like, don't ever talk to law enforcement. Nothing good can come of it. All they can ever do is, like, entrap you and charge you with making false statements and take things out of context. It's never helpful. Never talk to law enforcement for any reason. But when the TSA agent starts talking to me, I just ignore it. And then I wait for them to tell me I can leave, and then I go get my bags. And I recognize that I'm being kind of a dick to them, but they're, like, a cop, and I'm trying to not be detained by them. So the guy starts talking to me, and he's like, and he goes, hey, man, you're king? And he's, like, patting me down, and I just ignored it because I didn't understand what the fuck he was talking to me about. And then he goes, I asked you a question. He goes, you a king? And I was like, excuse me? And he goes, a Latin king. Are you a Latin king? And I said, no. And then he was like, and he's made some comment of, like, oh, you're no fun or something like that. And you know what? It's not my job to be fun for you.
Yeah, I'd say some of the, even setting aside getting your nads grabbed, the attitude of TSA pat down people. I realize it's not a very fun job, and they're not the brightest bulbs in the cupboard, but like some of the creepiest shit that I have personally experienced as a privileged white man has come from TSA guys, to some extent the women, but mainly the guys, is that they really got a serious Napoleon complex on. And they love leveraging that fact that they know that it's a fraud experience. It's stressful to travel, and it's really stressful to go through security because, not least because, like if you knew that you were going to get cavity searched, like, you would plan accordingly. But it's the random diceware aspect of not knowing what you can expect, where everything seems fine, but you just might end up in – I've ended up in a cubicle a couple times for reasons just because there's something on my back left pocket that they can't explain, and they're not happy with how the smudge test turned out. But, and the thing is, I got a wife and a daughter who did go through security, and, like, my first thought is, like, I need to get the fuck out of here and just play ball. And so I act like these high school dropouts are somebody that I should accord great amounts. I'm sorry, that was unkind. But a lot of them are dumb as a bag of hammers, and all they know, they act like basically like Alex's droog goon friend in Clockwork Orange. Like the guy who eventually becomes a cop and arrests Alex. That's who TSA is. edit in his name later so I sound smart.
The problem is there's two types of TSA agents. One I respect completely, and they know that this is theater. It wasn't that funny.
It's a really good joke.
Yeah, it's a really good image. It's like his friend Dim.
Okay.
Georgie and Dim.
Fine, you get one.
It's like Georgie and
Dim
from Bop
or Born. You got one.
Welly, 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 well, vitty well.
Oh,
we're back.
Boy.
Here's
something
biscuits.
Weird, though. Max, have you noticed in O'Hare, they, well, I guess not, because you were just traveling, they got a ton of bad press for, like, how long the lines were, and I went...
For TSA?
Yeah, and I went, and it was almost, I've never done pre-check. I know, I'm dumb, I'll do pre-check eventually, it's just a pain.
You're dumb, Alex.
And I went, and they were like, don't take off your shoes, don't take off your shoes, don't hang anything out of your bag. And it was as if I was traveling when I was 3 years old. And it was very strange, and no one knew what to do. The one thing you had to do was take off your belt, like you had to do in the 1990s. And then everyone's, like, yelling at me because I didn't take off my belt and my watch. But normally I just go through the scary machine, and then it's done. And then they look at all of the microphones and my batteries that look like I have a bomb. And I'm like, I know you're doing your job. And they're very frustrated with me. But I don't know. There's two types of TSA agents. Ones that know it's political theater, and they act the part, and they're like, you act your part, we'll get this through, we'll get this done as quickly as possible. And then there's Max's guy who, like, he's like, yeah, this is, I have this badge that means something.
I think he might have been goofing off for a lady TSA agent.
Yeah. And he was trying to show off his valor for the very attractive
TSA ladies. I think he was just trying to be goofy, but I didn't like it.
Can I dug a dugga?
Dig the dug.
Dateline.
Go ahead,
ABC News. Dateline. November 9, 2017. TSA fails most tests in latest undercover operations at U.S. airports. In recent undercover tests of multiple airport security checkpoints by the Department of Homeland Security, thank you for your service, inspectors said screeners, their equipment, or their procedures failed more than half the time, according to a source familiar with the classified report. When ABC News asked the source if the failure rate was 80%, the response was, quote, "You are in the ballpark." That's a nice feeling. That's a nice feeling. With all that, with all the butt touching and the pocket concerns, that's what you're looking at.
Well, it's
some people
it's
are
never
estimating
been,
it's as high as 90% fail rate.
It's never been safer to fly, but yet it has nothing to do with security.
It has to do with the fancier, good planes that don't crash as often.
It's the planes, and it's also the social role of the passenger changed after 9/11. That's why there's fewer hijackings and things.
You think it's the air marshals?
Well, I honestly don't even know if the air marshal program is still as robust as it once was. But there's also things like reinforced cockpit doors, and they just made some like that. Yeah. That actually is a good piece of security, I think.
Because it solves the actual problem, which is stops somebody from doing something to the plane. Right. So, I mean, like, not to go on my fucking hobby horse here, but on the one hand, I'm getting people sticking their finger up my ass while I'm watching some guy roll through a 200-gallon dumpster on wheels and just waves at the guy. And you're like, you know what? If I wanted to wreak a little bit of havoc at an airport, I would look for somebody who's making $27,000 a year pushing a dumpster and offer them. I would cross their palm to be involved in a little bit of a plot. That's what I would do. I would not be doing it through a passenger. I'd do it through somebody who works there. Mm-hmm. And it's bananas how people just waltz through there. It's like, you know, it's like Thoreau says about the spider web, like catches all the tiny flies, but the wasp just pass right through. It's crazy. It drives me fucking bananas. Like, at least fake it. At least have a separate useless entrance that those people walk through. You know, like, don't, it's just, and they're waving through all the people. Oh, look at me. I got a roller bag and a hat. So I'm definitely an air steward. Let me through. Bye. Have a good flight.
I'm glad that we can offer all of this.
Mr. Man, what kind of shampoo do you use? We have concerns that you might be using a shampoo with polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons that might be causing your back left pocket to trigger the device. Could you please come into this? No, no, no. Your family should stay nearby because we're not sure where this is going to go. Hey, Lou, come on through. Fuck me gently.
We're making families traveling this weekend feel so great. Thanks, live audience. Thanks, people listening to this later.
Thank you.
You know what else is crazy is like the way that they decide who to randomly screen at the airport on your ticket is determined by like the same algorithms that they use. They like ingest all this information from like social media and like credit reports and all the wherever the NSA gets data from, which is everywhere. And,
really?
Oh yes.
I'm gonna call bullshit on this. I don't think that's a thing anymore.
Oh yes, it is. I have friends who make it onto the no-fly list.
Really?
Well, let me tell you a story about my pal Harper. So my pal Harper recently went to renew his global entry visa, and so this story starts. Well, so he went to renew his. So let me. What's the best way to tell the story? So my friend Harper went to order a piece of luggage on Amazon, and the luggage never showed up. So after a month, he contacted Amazon and said the luggage never showed up, and they refunded him. And he was just like, oh, fine, I'll go to the store and buy a different piece of luggage. Then he went to the airport to go renew his like global entry visa, and he got denied because they said that he had tried to import a counterfeit piece of luggage.
What? Counterfeit luggage?
So this isn't like
So what happened was he ordered a piece of luggage on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon is – I hope our listeners know this. Sit down if you're, you know, if this is news to you. Amazon is riddled with counterfeit goods. So even if you buy from the seller, it sends you, there's a chance you'll just get a counterfeit good that's mixed in there.
I hope you have your fainting couch ready.
He was shipped a counterfeit bag and it was like held at customs.
It got him flagged.
Right.
Wow.
And now they use all kinds of information based on your credit report, Facebook. Like I said, like I don't know driver's history. Like you guys have no idea. I feel like most people don't truly grasp how much information there is out there. Like I could go on and in 10 minutes, I could know every charity that you've ever given money to, every political candidate that you've given money to. Like if you've ever like given money to causes, you can go like look into the causes and see if they're controversial. Like it's unbelievable. That stuff is all. Just in databases if you know where to go search for it, usually for free. And I don't even have what the government has, which is like they intercept massive amounts of internet traffic. And
so the lesson is don't buy luggage.
That's the main takeaway.
Want to tell us something about, man, see, I'm no Dan Benjamin. Tell me about that suitcase.
Me?
Oh, you guys know Fracture?
I didn't deserve that one. I'm sorry. I always want to get a slow one in there. Merlin,
yeah,
I'm really disappointed because I always edit out your LaCroix noises, and you're not making them. I want the real authentic live experience. Are you not enjoying a LaCroix right now?
Wow.
Oh.
There's just so many problems with that statement. First of all, thank you for shaming me with that completely unnecessary thing. Number two, America, I don't drink LaCroix.
Oh.
I drink Canada Dry. Canada Dry is a vastly superior
Whoa.
Sparkling water.
Oh, I didn't even know
Try
they
it.
Made.
Do a side-by-side. You.
Wow.
I like Canada Dry has a better bubble texture.
Interesting.
Well, it's also got a better taste. It's got a slightly more... Almost all sparkling water seltzer that you get in cans doesn't taste like anything. Canada Dry, sour is too strong a word, but it's got a little bit of a something to it that makes it like a regular drink. It's better. Try it. Try it today. Go. Do it. Amazon Prime yourself some Canada Dry. Do a side-by-side with any other sparkling water in Canada Dry. I'm telling you.
I wonder if I can
now, do you guys ever... The thing is, you might have weird Chicago water, so I don't know.
Do you guys ever have the Klarbrunn?
Mm-mm.
Klarbrunn. It's like the Kroger's, I think, brand or it's like some grocery store chain's brand of like house brand. It's like the nice brand of seltzer water, but it's Veronica and I's favorite.
Klarbrunn. Brun. Is it K or C?
K-L-A-R-B-R-U-N. Klarbrunn.
Klarbrunn.
That's my it's our favorite one. It's got a good it's got a good flavor, a good bubble texture.
It looks like a diet drink. Klarbrunn.
It's just a good ass seltzer.
This seems so fake. Vita Ice. Oh, they've got a little owl. No, this is not.
This is going off the rails. Merlin, what was the challenge this week?
You don't get a break?
You don't get a break.
You didn't earn that. You didn't.
Funny there.
Oh
no,
wait, I have important follow up. Oh my god, I completely forgot about this. Okay, I got a mystery package at the office the other day in a Kraft brown paper box, and I was like, "What is this?" I don't think I ordered anything, and I open it up, and it was one of those like tear to open things. And as I'm opening it, I see in there some little that little like vacuum formed like shrink wrap like stuff like how Apple mails you stuff. And I was like, I didn't order anything from Apple. And I open it up, and what is in there?
Oh, no.
What is
oh,
in
God.
There?
Oh,
but
God.
A
was it a treat?
But,
did you get a treat?
But
no.
But a USB-C wall charger and a USB-C to Lightning cable from a friend of the show at the Apple Corporation. And
oh,
I got
my
treat. I got a USB-C to Lightning cable, which I need for my work. I need that for my work.
You got a treat because you were such a good boy.
I gave my spot up in the line, and I got and the Apple Corporation rewarded me with a treat. Thank you, Apple.
Oh my God!
I was very upset that I gave my spot up so that I could, because I thought maybe I'd be rewarded with a treat, and I didn't get rewarded with a treat. Now I got my treat.
Couldn't they have done it a little faster, though? Let's be honest.
Finally.
Yeah.
You kind of got the AirPod of treats. Like eventually.
Oh, you got like the apology mouse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's fine.
Dig Dug, Merlin, it was your challenge this week.
Challenge this week comes from me, and that is to look at Max's U.S. politics list on Twitter. And after getting some context from Max on what this thing is and why and how he made it, I'm calling it a draft. It's not exactly a draft. I've spent over a year with this list now, and we could talk about why that is. I want you to, because I know all three of us, plus my wife and other people, look at this thing a lot. You get a feel for the people on this list. Who's good on that list and why? Who's not so good and why? And be prepared to discuss some things that you have learned or discovered from the list. I threw it to Max. Max, how, why, when did you make this list? How did you decide who's on there, and how has it changed over time?
Sure. Well, I've had this list for, I've had some variation of this list for as long as I've been on Twitter, because it's always been a very useful place for me when specifically the way that I use it is when there is a breaking story or something that is fast moving news, like, you know, I'm trying to think of an example, but like the election, right? Almost every day there was some crazy story. Or remember, like, after the inauguration, there were a couple of weeks where almost every night at 9 o'clock there was insane news from the Washington Post.
There was two news items a day and a protest every weekend.
It was bonkers. And I, when that is happening, or when there's a, you know, a shooting or something like that, I like a place where there's, where I can follow the, because it's related to my work, not because I think that sane people should read the news this way. I like to follow the political fallout from, like, current events. Mm-hmm. And so I've made a list for myself of people on the left and the right who are, like, not people that I like, but just the loudest voices. And I have mainstream people and outsiders and Trump people. And I try to just get everyone who's, like, an important, you know, person in the political ecosystem. And I cram them all into this list. And it's pretty intolerable to read. But I do scale. I do read it all the time. And the point, and again, like, the point is not that I'm reading this to, like, get the news or because I like it. It's because I do think that you can sort of get a feeling of, like, I think it does give you a little snapshot of, like, what's the discourse like right now? Like, what are the political dynamics among people who care about politics at this exact moment? So that's what the original list was designed to accomplish.
It's become, I mean, I have to be honest, I think it was extremely useful for something before the election, which was to try and just keep up with the fire hose of what was going on. But after the election, it's since the election, the year or so since, I think it continues to be really useful as a way to quickly take the temperature on where things are going, not least because, on the one hand, what the media decides to be obsessed with and cover is actually a very interesting story on its own, but also, candidly, the extent to which this particular group of people, with all respect, can by and large be so ridiculously obsessed and distracted by a tweet about the media for hours. To where that becomes the coverage. And I understand they're just bullshitting. It's not what they're going to put in the Washington Post necessarily. But it's very interesting to see, like, somebody throw the bone and then hundreds of people go run after it. I look at it constantly and I don't always feel good about it. But I feel like it's been kind of good for me in ways. What's your take, Alex?
This was like video games for me. You playing Clash Royale, that's what this political Twitter list is for me. Max, like you said, has modified it a lot since the election. And during the campaign, there was constant just a barrage of news, and it felt like knowing people's opinions was important at the time, because it felt like, okay, knowing what Nate Silver thinks, let's see if that 80% is going to change. Like, I don't know. It was almost comforting at times. Mm-hmm. Because the crazies on there were like, what's his name, Max?
Bill Mitchell.
Like the
crazies got crazier. Yeah. And then somehow you, between people like, maybe not necessarily Nate Silver, but you felt slightly soothed to, like, say, in the face of all the madness that I'm seeing in the news right now, there are people who are also kind of, I feel it's kind of soothing for them to say, like, oh no, this is the way things are actually going.
Yeah, and people would share infographics and polls and be like, okay, this is madness, this is something that I will tell my children about one day, but it's going to end. So it was almost like a Twitter security blanket. Didn't end up that way. Mm-hmm. And I have tried to avoid it somewhat unsuccessfully since the election, because now it feels like an echo chamber to me. And I know it doesn't to Max, because he knows these people and he knows the nuances of, like, what people are saying, and can tell, like, what is actually going on.
For sure it's an echo chamber.
Yeah, well, it more so now that, like, I don't know, like during a shooting or during a protest, actually during the election, it was also kind of like, okay, what streets are going to be closed off because there's going to be a protest, and what train should I take? But I don't know. I don't get anything out of it anymore. And this, I don't, I still don't really understand the challenge. Did you make separate lists, Merlin? Did you categorize?
Should I put my list? Maybe should I put my list in the document just so you can see how I did it?
Sure. I will put my list in as well.
It's going to be, it's just weird markdown, so I don't know if it'll make sense.
Well, I'm just
how
gonna,
do I get the, I'm on my iPad. How do I get the URL? How do I share my?
Oh my God, it's in the text. It's in,
I'm just going
to
text it.
No. How do I send my list to you?
We have it. It's public.
No, I have a new list.
Oh,
your list for the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So you go mm-hmm. to your profile and, which Twitter app are you using?
Twitter.
Then you swipe to whatever to get to your profile and go to lists.
I'm looking at the list.
And then I believe there's a share list.
False.
Or a copy, you know.
False.
What?
If only our live audience could weigh in.
Tippy toe. No tippy toe. Don't call.
I'm intrigued. My dad wears shoes in the shower. Pool?
I don't know how to share
it. What are we trying to do?
Well, Merlin, I want to look at your list. How do I see your list?
It's in the Google Doc, dude.
There's a doc?
Oh, my God. it's the second most recent thing in our super secret text channel. And I apologize that it's ugly. Oh, you know what? Maybe I'll make it monospace so it's prettier. Oh,
yeah. What is the name of your new list, Max? Oh, 2018?
Yes.
Okay. I'm sharing that now. Oh, interesting.
Oh, this I got to see.
Yes. It is in the super secret text channel, mine as well as Max's new list. Oh.
Can you tell us what's different about this one?
Immediately.
It just has 20. I tried to keep it to under 25 people.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. This is a lot fewer
so,
people.
And I actually know who most of these
are. And I did take Trump's feed off. So this list is designed for public consumption. If you this is like if you want to learn more about politics by reading Twitter, follow this list.
Some of these are very
good. It's not as useful to me because I don't get to see.
You're looking for a very brief blast from a fire hose.
Yeah.
It's not like you're with the big list, you want to go, the school shooting happened. Boom. Let's go see what's happening.
Right. Are we finally going to ban guns or not? And the answer is always no. But here's the one way to think about it, right? You guys are both a little bit in the Apple echo chamber, right? Or echo chamber, I mean. And Alex, you're also in the gaming echo chamber a little bit, right? And like those Twitter scenes seem fucking insane to someone who's not in them, right? When gaming Twitter was fucking losing its mind over the EA Battlefront microtransaction debacle, that was probably the biggest news item that existed for 3 to 4 days last week. Did you hear about this at all, Merlin?
I did. I heard about it, and I heard that people were super duper schmooper mad, and that they were making changes as a result.
Oh, I'm surprised it even filtered.
Well, something where like it's a treasure box type situation, and it was going to cost money, and just the idea of that made people super mad, right?
But more, I mean,
it was like a big wasn't it a big Reddit thing?
Yes, yeah, more or less. I'm just surprised that filtered out of the gaming, echo chamber ecosystem at all. But the same thing is true of Apple, right? Like when I'm trying to think of an example of like when Apple.
Like every keynote.
Yeah, but well, keynotes are actual news items. But I'm trying to think of like a minor Apple thing of like, wasn't everyone? Oh, the MacBook keyboard gate, right? Keyboard gate. That was like a huge fucking story, and everyone did a blog post, and everyone told their stories, and everyone had a hashtag, and everyone was talking about it. And like, I guarantee you that no one who is outside of the Apple echo chamber knows what the fuck that means at all, and they still haven't heard about it, and most of them haven't experienced it. The same thing is true of politics. There's all this little insular bullshit, and it's important to me to understand. This is personal. This isn't prescriptive for anyone else. I just want to understand what the fuck everyone is talking about. So it's like you kind of have to follow the scene and read all
these. You say as much sometimes.
Yeah.
You frequently say, what am I looking at here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually, I started building this list, and I tried to make it like a net neutrality type thing. Like I almost wish Twitter was better at sharing like temporary lists, you know, like, okay, here is a group of people who you can follow that actually know what they're talking about, can give you concrete actions to take and stuff like that. But really, I'm just looking at the EFF Twitter every few hours, being like, Cory Doctorow, tell me what to do. Merlin.
Well, I'm going to be a ray of sunshine and say that like. Oh, so yeah, I had an opening statement. I was just going to say, you can see in the Google Doc my giant list of the goods and the not so goods. And here's my general observation, which I typed this morning, that if you're somebody who is looking at this fairly often, there is, as you would expect, a lot of duplicate content. But what I realized is, and this is I guess kind of obvious, but you gravitate, given the amount of duplicate content or like just repetitive content, you really gravitate toward people whose style and point of view appeal to you. Whether or not you like 100% agree with them, whatever, everybody's got the same water and you start looking at whose glass you like, I think. Because part of it is like if you're going to look at this a lot, you gravitate toward the people. And some of these people I've actually started following on regular Twitter because I actually really genuinely like them. And then conversely, the other side of that is that at those times also, it doesn't take too long. This was kind of the point of the challenge. And I don't want this to be mean and be bagging on strangers, but there's some people on this fucking list I want to fire into the sun from a Twitter standpoint, where I've actually gone people I would never in a million years block because I'm not a big blocker, but like I had to block them because I couldn't see their words anymore. It was driving me nuts. People who I nominally like agree with, political allies, where I'm just like, I just need to never hear your Twitter opinion about this again.
Paperclip pals.
So I had to go. Well, here's the downside of this app.
Paperclip pals.
I don't know what that means. You, if you mute somebody, that does not count for a list.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yuck.
A muted person will still show up on your list, Josh Marshall. And so you just keep seeing that Armando Codes, and the people just keep coming up, and you just pray, Chris Geidner, that I wouldn't have to see this anymore. You hear, and David Seamus Obama Foundation. You just kind of want, you know, Hakuna Matata. I appreciate your work. Thank you for your work, Malcolm Nance. And I really enjoy Garrick Sparoff. And you could, some people you think so much of, Sherilyn Eiffel, that you like really like them, but you're like, you just can't take any more of the three tweets. I can't take the yes. You, oh, look what you did. You took a photo of a screen while someone was talking and put it up. And then you did that 16 times in a row. Thank you. Oh, that's definitely a slide from a PowerPoint.
One of my favorites is Josh Marshall's Twitter feed where he takes like,
oh, Jesus,
he'll
Christ,
take like a news article and draw like a stick man on it and then repost it.
Oh, God.
And oh, it's red now.
And it's like,
thanks, buddy.
What is this, a little political cartoon? What's going on here?
Oh, you got an Apple Pencil. That's nice.
All of the screenshots of, well, then that's the other problem.
We can't wait to see what he does with it.
Yeah.
he's such a repackager, you know? He's such a repackager. My latest on deep.
I also really like, meaning somebody, I also really like that you have a category here called the Security Men, and it's got one of my favorite accounts on it, which is Jester. So,
oh,
so I felt like I needed, let me tell you the logic of this. So I felt like I needed to represent the insane Trump Russia people, the total like the people who are like deeply infected with the Trump Russia
brainworms.
They're
almost like the security version of Louise Mensch. They're always like, it is just around the corner. Here it comes.
Well,
get ready.
Well,
next 12 Jester, hours.
They're all of a kind. But Jester was, I found him to be the most palatable, and he does have like technical expertise. So he also posts about like InfoSec stuff that's like very informed. But you know what's funny about his account is he posts 800 times a day, and 790 of them are like drama involving him.
That's exactly. Almost all of these are like "come at me, bro" kind of things.
Yeah,
it's like a way of like, it's because the currency of the realm is attention and faves. It makes people do insane things to get the currency, and it's some sort of deficiency in human psychology that people can't really understand that currency doesn't. I don't think that it does anything for them. But it certainly, you get,
and it fades so quickly,
right? But
like your words will always be there, but the neediness to feel good for 10 minutes, like that just goes away.
Well, it's like these people just hop leaf from one conflict to another, and from dunking on someone or apologizing to something or being outraged about something to the next, and there's never any broader thought of like what's the message that I'm putting out there? What is the audience? Like, what is this? What's next? Where does this feed
like
into?
How will I find out who was on Reliable Sources tonight? Is there any way that I could go and find out? Or for example, the Morning Plum. What was in the Morning Plum? How am I going to find out?
Now, it's like something that my friend Merlin said, very smart thing that he said one time, which is, nobody remembers on the internet whether you won or lost an argument. They only remember that you're an asshole that argues on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's kind of true, but like, yeah, everybody picks their brand and they pick their particular hillock to nearly die on. And like, that's okay. We're not talking about the positive things. We're only talking about the negatives. But here's the thing. My lady got on this too. And I was telling her I was prepping for this, and you can see I spent probably more time on this challenge than any other thing that I've done on this show.
Did you make an actual list?
The Google Doc.
But I see the
Jesus Christ.
Where I'm looking at the Google Doc.
Use your scroll hand.
I'm looking at it. Where is the link to your list?
What?
Where is your list?
No. I went in and I manually created.
No, I'm staring at it. I'm staring at that. Did you make, what I'm asking you is, did you make a Twitter list of your people?
No.
Why? Why not?
I did not. Why would I do that?
So I can follow it.
Oh, you think that's the challenge?
I thought that was the challenge.
No. Oh, gosh, no. I have no interest in doing that. No, I just want to talk about who I like. I want to talk about how I've discovered people that I like a lot, and I want to talk about what's frustrating. No, I can do that, I guess.
No, I don't know
who would want that.
I do.
But... Yeah. Okay. All right. I could work on that.
Let's just put it in the show notes and someone will make it for us.
Listen, everyone listening.
No, don't do that. Okay. I don't want these people's names in typable searchable
form.
Fair. Yeah, you know that those fucking people Google themselves 50
right,
times a day.
You're right.
Listen, here's.
Can we just stipulate that that Farhad? Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Our friend, he's on the funny, witty, charming list. I just want to put him at ease because I know he's.
Well, but I do have some beef.
Also, James Fallows.
I do have some beef with Farhad that I want to bring. I do have some beef with Farhad that I want to bring up on the podcast. And I know this is fair because he doesn't have a forum to defend himself, but he advocated making tuna salad with no mayonnaise on Twitter the other day, and I was totally captivated by that because
he's history's greatest monster.
I didn't get a reply, but what is the binding agent? In order for it to be a salad, it has to have something to hold it together. What holds it together?
Somebody,
if there's no mayo, there has to be something wet in there that holds it together.
No, it's called a fork. As someone who eats salad without dressing, you just got to get a good fork.
Oh, yeah.
But that's like crudité. That's not a salad, though. It's a crudité.
Okay, so...
You're just eating fish. You're just eating fish. Don't call it tuna salad.
No.
It's just tuna. You're just eating tuna.
So my lady does it too, and she has not had the temerity to go and block all the people. And so she's getting your Trump's feed in there, which I blocked a million years ago. That's what makes it a fire hose, really, is the, like, don't you think? Part of what makes it really, really heavy is the – tell people what Trump's feed is.
Oh, Trump's feed is it's an account, and they follow every account that Trump follows, and they selectively retweet interesting tweets that come across Trump's feed.
So
did you see?
I actually
last night at 1 a.m.
Yeah.
He or Scavino or somebody took the time at 1 a.m. Eastern time last night to change the graphical header on his Twitter page to a picture of him and a phalanx of people in his family standing in front of a turkey, standing behind a turkey. Somebody did that at 1 a.m. last night. Somebody said, I need to go put up the picture with the turkey. And that's a thing they did at 1 a.m. last night.
That was like something really perplexing because I'm like, I don't think Trump knows how to do this. So who?
I don't either. It's probably Scavino's helper monkey.
He's got a boy. He's got Eric. He can just... Eric!
After this week? Wouldn't surprise me.
And so what's interesting, though, is like there are a bunch of people on there, you know, even though everybody's got the same water, as you'll see in my good list. I would like to call out some people and see what if you guys agree in a good way, call out. But people who I've discovered who I'm like, I'm really glad I did, like Ryan Lizza and David Fahrenthold. Like, I'm really glad to have discovered their stuff, mostly from this list. I mean, David Fahrenthold, what a the stuff that he comes up with is so wackadoo, but he treats it so seriously. He's almost like somebody in a 90s zine where he's taken something that can seem very unimportant, but he puts it like the Time magazine cover in the clubs. Remember that? That he covered that so well and so thoroughly and put in the legwork. And in some ways, that's some of the most interesting little stories is things like that. Rather than some, I mean, certainly I'm glad somebody's out there reading all the reports and all the things and putting together a summary of that and all of that. And anyway.
Well, if for anyone listening to this, my challenge here, I urge you to unsubscribe from my political Twitter list, which was never really intended for any sort of public consumption whatsoever, and go to my Twitter profile and look at U.S. Politics 2018. And there you will see an updated list with just people that I sort of endorse you're paying attention to.
My list contains two things, or two accounts, Maggie Haberman and Trump's Twitter feed, because that's the kind of, it's really the only thing that I get actual insight.
She's had to cut back, though. She got the kibosh from the New York Times, and she's cut way back, and it sucks.
I think
the New York Times basically said, you're no longer allowed, as a person who works for the New York Times, you can't be fun. You can't do anything that could appear to make us look partisan. And I miss her tweets because she was so good.
And the reason it's on there is I'm trying to keep a bear. I might as well just honestly follow the New York Times political Twitter or whatever. But seeing Trump's feed is remarkable. It's still just shocking to me, and not even shocking oh, I must clutch my pearls, but just the absurdity and the strange things.
Do you get Bill Mitchell? Is Bill Mitchell?
No. I think
Bill Mitchell.
I miss the era when I was paying attention to Bill Mitchell, because the reason I was paying attention to him was I thought that for sure he would be one of the standout funniest details of an era when we all went insane and Trump was a presidential candidate.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I now find it very depressing and upsetting to think about Bill Mitchell, because it turns out that he was more accurate of a prognosticator than almost anyone else in politics. He's the smartest man in U.S. politics.
You would think that at this point he and Joe Walsh should be the ones that have a vlog, but instead it's Oberman. Mm-hmm. It's quite a twist.
Just crying on the floor with a wrapping a flag. Yeah.
Sir, have you no dignity, sir? Can I talk about my good people? Can I just do a quick whistle stop?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Can I send shots? Is that too boring?
No, I have some new good people to introduce you to.
Okay, here's some of my good list ones. Daniel Dale, Katie Turr, Dave Weigel, Ben Wittes and Susan Hennessy from Lawfare Blog, Emma Loop, Ben Jacobs, Maggie Haberman, Stephen Dennis, Betsy Klein, Olivia Nuzzi, if that's how you pronounce it, and Jennifer Bendery. That's a bunch where, I like their style. I enjoy their content a lot of times, but I also like their style. And I feel like those are voices of people that rise above the din by often having something different, unusual, fun to say about what's going on. And I have more, but that's my top, the first few on my list.
On my new list, I've upgraded and added a bunch of new people that I'm really interested in. So I really like my new representative for the sort of hashtag resistance, Trump Russia stuff, is my pal Renato. So he's a former U.S. prosecutor. Renato Mariotti is his name. He's running for attorney.
Oh, yeah, I've seen him.
He does sort of tweet threads, but rather than being conspiracy mongering, they're actually legal explainers of what terms mean and what the risk actually is. If you wanted to follow one person to get accurate, non-obnoxious, non-hyperbolic, but still coverage of the Trump-Russia stuff, follow Renato Mariotti. He's also a frequent contributor on MSNBC and CNN and stuff. But he made the list. Elizabeth Joe, who does the podcast What Trump Can Teach Us About Con Law with Roman Mars.
Oh, that's a good show. I just started listening.
It's really fun, and she's a great lawyer and a good speaker.
She's a good communicator.
She's very good on Twitter.
I know a lot of conservatives who really enjoy that show, because they're oh, this makes sense, and I don't know. I just really it has a different tone than a lot of political podcasts.
About the Central Park Five and his intervening in cases was, I thought, super interesting. Mm-hmm.
I put a bunch of new reporters on who are sort of policy. I found I added a bunch of people who are sort of policy beat reporters, so I put some labor reporters and immigration reporters and stuff like that. So just trying to further make the list useful to people following the news rather than just political fallout of things. Let's see. I have a couple of weird Twitter people in there. My favorite right now is probably Alex Nichols. He tweets as Low and Option. He's the little gremlin guy, and he writes for The Outline and Current Affairs. Anything he writes is unbelievable and extremely funny. He wrote the piece about unboxing videos. That's one of the funniest things I've ever read. Let's see. I don't think we mentioned her, but Sarah Cliff is the country's preeminent healthcare reporter. She's unbelievable. She's on the weeds on Vox, but her Twitter is great. Trying to see if
it's a good show.
Well, we didn't mention him, but John Dickerson.
Oh, yeah.
He's good. He's got his two accounts. He has. You get to see two sides of John with his accounts, which is fun.
Wait a minute.
You get it, on the one account, you get the dad jokes. On the other one, it's a little more serious.
Wait, I think I just have the serious one. What's the dad jokes account?
He mentions it once a month. He mentions that he has two accounts. I forget which is which. There's like Jay Dickerson and John Dickerson. There's one which is his like handsome man photo, and there's other one with him as a picture of him as a kid, and that's more of his personal stuff and dad jokes.
Oh.
And it's a nice compliment to his dad joke Tumblr.
The dad joke one
is
in.
A very good person.
Yeah. He made a good notebook. What a guy.
Mm-hmm.
There's my favorite tweet this morning from Trump's feed was this guy just getting mad about trans people, and I'm gonna put a photo in our super secret chat, and it's this joke graphic that's been going around of like half of these genders people do not identify as, and they're fake. And I was like, and it is based off the Pokemon. That are called the unknown because they look, they're just nonsense symbols that look like the alphabet. And I'm like, this man is railing against a joke in the queer community. And I'm like, what is happening? And there's so much about, it's not even fake news. It's just jokes that are being taken as fake news. Man.
Right.
The turkey gifts were kind of fun. Like, I expected more. I thought it would be more embarrassing, but...
I've avoided that. funny, witty, charming, Haley Bird. I think she's a delight, and I like that she likes dogs so much. Christina Reynolds, I'm enjoying her very much. I've started following her as a human being. Mm. Dan Zak. Chris Hayes. And I'll tell you what I like about... I like Chris Hayes' program on MSNBC. I also think he walks right up to the line in terms of promotion, but I think he's very good at it. And I like his Twitter account. I like James Fallows. Those are most of mine.
Chris Hayes, difficult follow for me.
Problematic?
I don't know. I'm flipping down the tweet and I'm like, the feed, I'm like, who retweeted this bullshit? And it's a lot of the time it's Chris Hayes. But he does have, he has Zenny on a lot.
this feed,
did you mean Shenny?
Shenny? Is that how you say her name?
Well, you know, it's like my friend Martin Scorsese. I mean, so what are you sending me here, chatty robots?
No,
chatty
sorry,
robots.
This is just the Drudge Report complimenting self-checkout stations that look like robots. It's just ridiculous.
It's weird.
There's, I don't know if you know this, but there's this guy, Merlin Mann, who wrote an essay almost
Jesus.
10 years
oh,
ago.
No, okay.
There's this thing that I really like. This.
Can I just let my entire career just die?
There's.
Please?
Let's pretend that this. Actually, this was not from you. I really like the idea of not just with food, but like in life. And I know this is very sit on a cushion and meditate type of thing. But there's feeding, there's eating, and then there's dining. And the political Twitter list kind of.
What are the differences?
So
I've never heard this.
Feeding
is just putting food in your face for sustenance.
Yes, mm-hmm. and sometimes sometimes you can't tell the difference between when it is substantive. Good Lord, I'll edit that out. And when it is just you thinking that you need it. And eating is when you make a conscious decision about what you put in your body or brain. Whereas dining is like you are truly selecting what you want in either a culinary
it's more of like an experience.
Yeah, in a culinary or intellectual way. So I think of like Twitter as like feeding, like well-written articles as like eating, and then novels that things that stay with me for more than a week as like dining. And there was a part of an essay by a person that I think about still like once a month. And it's, what worries me are the consequences of a diet comprised mostly of fake connectedness, make-believe insight, and unedited first drafts of everything. I think it's making us small. I know that whenever I become aware of it, I realize how small it can make me. So I've come to despise it. with the diet metaphor in mind. I swear, Merlin didn't do the feeding eating.
That was pretty
thing.
Good. I got to
yeah,
admit,
it was very moving.
I
want to, if you like, start eating better, but I also want to start growing a tastier tomato, regardless of how easy it is to pick up, package, ship, or vend. The tomato is the story. And it's like this week, I quit like 10 projects I've been on that just made me sad and unhappy and anxious.
And you also, didn't you do a culling in Overcast too?
Oh yeah. Well, that was just a little bit out of it. That got a little, most of those feeds were like dead shows. But I was like, man, I do like this show and one other show I do. It's Roboism. I'm going to plug it. Go listen to Roboism. I care about that show very mm-hmm. much. I'm trying to make it better. And
it's a good show.
And it's getting better. And
I like Savannah. Is that
I,
all right?
Can I oh yeah, like no, something? No. Savannah's okay? the best person in the world.
I like you too, Alex. I like
I'm
you too.
I'm all right. Sometimes I can fly a drone. All right. But I don't want to let people down. There are people in this room that I would never want to let down, and there are people like my family and Savannah, who's the best person in the world, and. I don't know, the other projects I don't want to get all inbox zero and back to work, but it really, like, looking at this Twitter list, I'm like, I am miserable. And again, this is not to reflect on Max and like this is
well,
his true.
I mean, to use a phrase by an old blogger, it's like drinking salt water.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you think you're quenching your thirst, but you're actually making each sip you take is making it worse and worse and worse until you just need more salt water, which will never make you happy, and it goes on and on and on until you stop drinking salt water. That's the only way to stop being thirsty is to quit drinking salt water. And it feels counterintuitive until you face that and you go, there's no bottom to this. This has to end.
Yeah. I've been giving serious consideration to changing how I don't want to say leaving Twitter, but dramatically changing mm-hmm. how I use Twitter.
It's kind of hard not to.
Well, yeah. for me, it would be very hard for me to do my job.
Exactly. Yeah.
Without using Twitter at all, mm-hmm. without posting to Twitter when we do something or trying to follow up on it. But I do think I spent, I mean, you know, this week I want to tread delicately here, but like I just spent the last couple of weeks and it's like you just go on and you read one depressing news story that just makes you nauseous after another. And then the only thing that anyone can say is to be more outraged and mad than the person before them. It can only escalate.
I know exactly. I totally
agree. And it's not it's just unattractive. It's just unattractive.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to get through the I think it's difficult to get through the phase of something that has been bottled up blowing open, because it's certainly necessary for that thing to blow up. But I'm not even going to say anything. But it's
Yes. I don't want to make anybody sad. Like feeding is an okay thing to do. Like, our friend of the show, Marco, wrote what I thought was, like, a really good blog post about what makes this one laptop great. And it was totally, like, an insider.
Great.
Yeah, and I loved it. And that felt like an eating experience of, like, this is a really good piece of writing by somebody I respect and had some great insight. But then I just, like, went on, like, a Twitter binge of all the people and all their takes. And that was just me basically funneling Twitter Funyuns into my mouth for an hour. And that's not, I don't know. That's not bad all the time.
It's funny how, like, in certain situations, being overwhelmed by one thing makes you realize how overwhelmed you are by other
exactly.
things. And I say this hopefully without any judgment. It's just an opinion. But it's kind of like me and iPhone 10. I know I'm going to like this. I imagine I'll get one. It would be heretical at this point for me to say that I don't have plans to get one because of how much I'm told by everyone how much I love it, which I'm sure I will. But it's also, there's something keening and sad about how much people need to let you know how much they like the thing that they bought. And at a certain point, that becomes very overwhelming. And then the response to that is how much I need to let you know how much, like, I like the thing that I bought and I don't need that because I don't own a TV. And then that just goes on and on. And it just becomes more trying to one up this other person about what you decided to buy, which I'm not trying to do a late capitalism move here, but like at a certain point that becomes, you want to catch yourself when you find yourself having an overwhelming number of thoughts about that kind, deciding to make that a thing that you're going to argue about in public. There's something that's very frankly depressing about that to me, that now you have ceded ownership of this big part of the big green lawn that is your brain to something that is beyond ephemeral, that is beyond trivial, that is beyond unnecessary, and that is beyond needing any grown person to spend any time defending it. And yet we find ourselves drawn into that. And that is what makes you small. It's allowing that to take over your lawn is just about the worst thing you can do as an adult.
That was some good Merlin Mann stuff. Funny, show? Happy things.
After show?
Are we doing the after show?
I think we should go to after show. Let's go to the after show. Don't you think?
Well, we got to play the theme music to end the podcast because we're not editing. let me just poke the rocket with a stick here. Hang on.
Wait. Hold on. What do you call a lesbian with long fingernails?
Well, I don't call her anything because that joke structure is problematic.
God damn it. Single.
No edits, baby.
All right. Now we've made the
because of finger banging.
Yep. That's
I thought
the joke.
I thought it was an aesthetic thing, but you're talking about finger banging.
I am talking about the gay sex.